I don't want a pickle. I just want to ride on my motorcycle.
Ho, ho, ho. Here it is, our special Christmas episode that we promised you. We are doing a commentary track slash just general review.
A riff track.
A riff track to some degree of the movie Torque. What year is this movie?
2004.
Now, here we go. If you haven't seen this movie, Torque, all right, do yourself a favor. Stop right now. Go on Amazon. It's $3. Watch this movie. Now, if you haven't seen it, that's fine. You can just go ahead and listen. We're going to do this in a way that you can just listen to this without having to be watching the movie at the same time. But I think it's going to add something for you because this movie is a treat. There are things just visual that are just going to blow your mind when you watch this. So, having said that, here are your instructions. So, when I say the word pause again, you're going to pause this recording. Then you're going to start your recording of the movie. There'll be the Warner Brothers logo, then it'll say Village Roadshow, and then it's going to fade to black for just a second. When it fades to black, that's when you start this recording again. Everybody clear? Okay. Pause. And here we go, right on that stoplight. An intersection completely unneeded, apparently?
Yeah.
Where's the intersection for this?
I don't know. You don't see it in the forward or rear shot.
Yeah, we got a turtle in the middle of the road. That's a cue a little too on the nose. So this movie is from the producers of the Fast and Furious franchise. So we start with these two Fast and Furious Paul Walker knockoff cars racing. And in typical Fast and Furious motion, it seems that when you change gears is much like playing like poker or something. There's some sort of back and forth strategic maneuvers that make you a better racer rather than just going to red line and changing gears.
Did you just notice the NOS sound when he hit the brakes and cut the throttle?
Yeah, there's a lot of weird racing noises that make no sense. But this, I love this intro because it establishes something very early on that's a theme throughout this entire film, which is motorcycles can just apparently appear out of nowhere. So we've
and got wheelie at 160 miles an hour, apparently.
Yeah, full on wheelie extended. So, yeah. Also, it establishes that motorcycles can move so fast, they can move more air than a semi and blow other vehicles off course.
I just want to point out that the spinning turns, the spinning sign says cars suck.
That's right. So, yeah, here we meet our hero, Colt Ford. He's come to this gas station,
which apparently is straight out of the 1950s.
And yeah,
there's a small child dispensing gasoline.
Right. So he's just blown these two cars off of the road by driving way too fast on his motorcycle. And so he's going in here to get this picture off a wall. We don't know why he's doing this yet. It doesn't really matter. What matters a lot more is what's about to happen, to me anyway. So, uh-oh, here we go. Here are Fast and Furious knockoff Mitsubishis again. And here comes the greatest moment in this movie. But maybe not the greatest moment, but one of my personal favorites. This guy shoves this kid here, right? For no reason. The kid just, he works at the gas station. He's seemingly going up to see if he can wash his windshield. And he just shoves the kid for no reason. And he says, what is it about driving cars that makes you all such assholes? Oh,
and it's also weird that they're dressed like gangbangers, but they're driving these souped up Evo motors.
Yeah,
like,
it doesn't work. So our hero naturally kicks their ass.
And apparently they just keep their tire irons on their passenger seat.
Right. He hits people in the face with tire irons multiple times and they're still sort of ready to fight. And I want to talk about this. He says, you know, you want to do something about these dirty windows, holding the guy's face up to the glass. And the kid's like 5. And he goes, make it 10. And then it doesn't track that, you know, he throws the tire iron, it sticks into the ground. And then the guy on the ground pulls his wallet out to throw the kid 10 bucks. It took me like 6 times of watching this to understand that's what was happening, that he was just trying to get him to pay the kid. And there, scene after scene like that, it doesn't make sense. But
okay, also the CGI windmills.
Yeah, okay, we have to talk about these CGI windmills. So everything in this movie is shot super weird. And we have this theory that it was all shot in the same place. So they had to do all these crazy close-ups and create all these fake backgrounds in certain scenes to make us think we're in different spots. But anyway, it's important here that we meet two other characters who, as soon as those other cars left, these bikes just appeared. More vanishing and appearing motorcycles. Common theme. This is not going to stop. What is it? No one can hear these bikes coming. No one knows where anyone else is.
I'd also just like to point out, they didn't know he was coming back. He also didn't call them. They just happened to stop at this gas station.
Right. Yeah. I don't know these sidekicks' names, and I've seen this movie like 7 times now. I don't know what their names are. They're completely inconsequential to the plot. They're there just for our hero to have friends, I guess. But they say something like, okay, so you've been in Thailand or whatever. And this is our first hint that he's been out of town. But they keep bringing up this thing that he's been in Thailand. And they never really fully explain why Thailand, right? Ugh. Okay, so now we've got this amazing opening credits thing where we learn that Ice Cube is going to be in this movie. That's right, Ice Cube is the biggest name in this movie. So they're riding through the desert. I guess this is California or Nevada desert, one of the two. That's what it looks like. We're not given much clues to where the hell we are. But we are introduced to the idea also that these guys are supposedly badass riders, because in a moment here, they get some knee down and sparks fly off of the ground. This
is great cinematography.
It is shot very well. I'll give it that. Like, it looks good, because this is from the producers of The Fast and the Furious. And they clearly wanted to capture that same, you know, blurry fast look. And the weird, like, late 90s, early 2000s, like, bright color palette look that those movies had. So they got this music video director, Trevor Raven or whatever his name is, to make this movie as, I believe, his very first, like, Hollywood, like, regular movie, not a music video, right?
Right.
So he does give it a certain look. And I will say, like, you know, this movie's trying to be a genre film, I guess. It's a pretty cookie cutter script with, you know, the world of motorcycles thrown in, right? If you think of The Fast and Furious was a heist movie and it just introduced car racing into that, this is a just cookie cutter generic movie. Here we go again. So they've just gone by this huge group of black bikers hanging out on the side of the road in the desert. And apparently they were riding so fast, they blew him off his bike, as he was, by the way, just sleeping on his bike on the side of the road. I don't know who does that.
Seems a little reckless.
Not only that, but in a matter of seconds, he's managed to catch up to them. Like, why is he part of a biker gang and not racing MotoGP?
Yeah. I mean, they would be a quarter mile up the road before he'd even hit the ground. Like,
I'm also curious to what his plan is. He's like, I'm going to get him. So now he's caught up to him, and they lose control of their bikes, and they go into the other lane, and he crashes. no one's concerned if he's hurt or whatever. They just immediately get up. They pull him up off the ground. For all they know, he's dead. And they just start beating the shit out of him. These are our heroes. This guy's just been in an accident. And they just start beating the shit out of him. Somehow the fight gets broken up. And now he pulls this knife. Oh my gosh, this is so insane. We're not going to just do the scene by scene like commentary through this whole thing. It's just in this opening, so much happens, everybody. We have to talk about these bits. So now we get the rest of the biker gang showing up, and they form this circle around them. Do they just have this like standard plan that, hey, if anyone messes with us, we're going to completely block the road on this blind turn and form a circle against around our adversaries? Is that just the standing thing that these guys do?
Yeah, it's pretty elaborate.
Right.
Also, we don't have any establishing shot of really where they are or who these people are, but somehow it's just a bunch of guys in the desert on ridiculously expensive brand new motorcycles.
Yeah, we don't know how they make money or anything, but I want to see on their jackets here, do we learn what Ice Cube's motorcycle gang is called?
I don't think so.
Again, I've seen this movie 7 times. I have no idea what his gang is called. But he definitely makes it known that this is their territory and they're not supposed to be here. And he also knows, we establish here that he knows our hero, Colt, because he's like, oh, you're back. You were gone, right? And, but he knows he went to, like, China, whatever, and they say some crazy racist stuff about sushi and whatever here. But this doesn't track for me. We don't know what their relationship was. And we're not given any clue either, except that he's willing to cut him slack, but he also hates him. I don't get it. There's no like past beef that's mentioned. I don't know.
Well, I don't think they ever had any issues before. I think it was just that he's now just demanding that they give him a bike for his brother, and that's their only beef.
So this is the start of their beef, and otherwise they were just in their territory that they're not supposed to be in.
Apparently. But I mean, we go on and Ice Cube is kind of like, he's kind of the super aggressive, but also somehow measured gangster as well.
We've got to talk about this biker rally that they've gone to, right? So they've driven out into the middle of nowhere to go to this biker rally. And this is where it's really obvious that this was directed by a music video guy, because we essentially get this like 40-second music video. It's basically a Kid Rock music video with a lot of girls and snakes and bikes and wet t-shirts. And there's not an old person in sight.
I also just want to point out that
I can tell you from going to a biker rally, it's only old people. There are no hot chicks at biker rallies in real life.
I'd also like to point out that this is where a lot of the impracticalities of this movie show up, where they just pull into the strip and they don't have their jackets and they're not wearing their helmets, but they're on these sport bikes. Where have they put their shit?
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, yeah, here we go. So Champion Spark Plugs was really wanted to make themselves known in this movie. The kid was wearing a Champion hat. Colt has a Champion patch on his leathers. And this girl who's introduced here as a love interest has a Champion tattoo on her arm.
Some interesting product placement.
Interesting, to say the least. So now, okay, we got it. Oh, man. So, okay, he's going into Shane's shop now, and this is the girl that he pulled the picture off of. This is insane to me. Originally in the script, he must have been the shop owner, but okay, she's working on these carburetors. She's jamming a screwdriver into the intake of the carburetor clumsily. She's supposed to be a mechanic shop owner here. What's going on? Okay, I've got to talk about these rearview mirrors. This is supposed to be a scene that lets us know that this movie is somehow self-aware. He comes up behind her. She doesn't know who he is. He says something to let her know that it's him, or she recognizes something that he says, but she's staring at rearview mirrors. So we're supposed to get that, like, oh, she sees but doesn't see, right? Like, we're getting some sort of clue that this movie knows that it's bad or whatever. No, it's not clever. It's literally a wall of mirrors. Doesn't work.
It's also interesting.
Yeah?
It's also interesting that they kind of just come to terms.
Oh, hold on. This is a Jesse James cameo. He throws out the rim there.
This is... It's also interesting how in about 3 minutes of dialogue, they just come to terms with the fact that he's been gone for months without saying anything.
I'll give this movie this. It gets up and going really quick. Like, the story gets going. They don't waste a lot of time. This movie comes in at something like a tight hour and 18 minutes. Like, it moves along. I'll give it that.
That's true.
Okay. So yeah, let's keep some dialogue going for people who aren't watching the movie along with us. I do just want to keep just stop and just watch and bask in the glory of this movie, because I do have to say, we're going to talk a lot of shit, but I do love this movie. All right, so now we get all of our bad guys. Harley Davidson wanted nothing to do with this movie. Every single guy in this bad guy biker thing are on Yamaha Strikers. And I believe they were all sort of decked out by Jesse James. Oh my God. We have to talk about his mullet too. The main villain in this movie has the most unique and amazing mullet I've ever seen in my life. I know they had to do this sort of like old school bikers and rednecks versus sport bike guys sort of thing, but They're really going for it in this.
It kind of looks like the sort of mullet that you would give yourself.
Yeah. It looks home done, doesn't it? Yeah, it looks like he just went for it. All right, and he just spanked Jamie Presley. Okay, I love this guy in the background here with the pink hair. I think he's going to come back again. There's a lot of extras trying to steal focus in this movie. Yes, look at him. So here they're talking about him going to Thailand again, and the food and whatever, it was great. Again, they never bring up exactly why he chose Thailand. We get scenes of Jamie Presley's ass crack here, just because no one wants to hear exposition, I guess.
You know, as bizarre as her role is,
Jamie Presnell is someone we used to know in Japan.
But she does a really good job of selling her character with
no dialogue
whatsoever.
She just said her first line, and that's we have to wait like another hour for her to speak again. But okay, we have to talk about Jamie Presley, because this introduces a big thing in this movie, because it's shot by this music video director. There's a lot of like face close-ups shots in this movie, and I guess he must have given everyone the direction, all right, I need a lot of mouth work. So all of our characters at some point have some sort of tongue lip smacking and lick lipping action. And without fail, in every scene that Jamie's in, she is trying to sexily lick her lips, to a point that it just loses all effect and becomes total comedy.
It's pretty great.
Oh, God. We need to... So, you had a point about the economy in this movie.
Yeah, so apparently everyone's just kind of hanging out in the desert, but yet we have all of these gangs riding ridiculously expensive motorcycles, who are also apparently really big into safety. But... are they selling drugs, or what's the economy that they're leeching off of here? What illegal activity are they doing?
Well, here in this scene
that supports this extravagant lifestyle,
Ice Cube is actively telling us that he is not willing to sell drugs.
Right.
So what is their hustle? He's got this limo that he uses for an office. They've all got brand new ZX7s in his gang. And apparently his territory is just the middle of the fucking desert. Who are they trying to run scams on? Where are they making a buck? I mean, maybe they're just running down other bikers and stealing their bikes, I guess. Maybe it's a chop shop sort of thing, but we're given no hint. Anyway, this movie's full of tropes as well. Like, I think in a second here, we're going to get like the big, like, you know, sort of 95 to 2005 movie trope of everyone just shows up at a secret club that no one else knows about. The only one exclusive fraction or part of sect of society shows up to, right? So in this case, this is the biker hangout. Whether you're a sport bike guy or whatever, you go to this, like, biker rave is the only thing.
But it doesn't explain why they call the cops.
Yeah, we do need to explain this real quick. We just see somebody cut a chain on a motorcycle and then walk away. This is a hugely important part of the story that's just never explained again. Well, I mean, it is. It's referred to later, but, like, we have to wait a long time for this to pay off, is what I'm saying.
Well, no, and we find out in, like, 3 minutes.
No. No, 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 no. Wait, set a timer right now. We're at, like, 20-something minutes. Like,
2013.
There we go. Oh, okay. There's another thing about this movie. Apparently, everyone can ride at high speed with nothing covering their eyes, and it doesn't bother them whatsoever.
And they're also riding, like, through the smoke from road flares. But yeah, apparently, at any time, if a rider chooses to go off without a helmet, like, it's just fine. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. Also, they can leave their helmets behind in certain scenes and then have them again later. Doesn't track. I don't know. Because, like, yeah, where did Colt get these jeans and t-shirts he's in now? He showed up here on just a bike with leathers, and now he's fully dressed like a regular dude. I don't know where he stashed his stuff or how he's going to get back to it. Oh, here we go. Right. So then just with no warning, we're at the secret motorcycle rave. There's no official club security. A Monster Magnet is playing with Zach Wilde. So that's a real thing that's happening in this movie.
Well, again, this is the director at work playing to his strengths.
Yeah, maybe he was directing a Monster Magnet video at the time and was like, "Hey guys, like, I'll give you like an extra $80 and a case of PBR if you do this movie thing for me."
It's vertical integration.
Oh, yeah. And of course, we have the inevitable club fight. Oh, so good.
So supposedly he owes this guy a motorcycle, and yet they're like, "Hey, let's just crash his club later tonight."
Yeah.
It's an interesting set of decisions being made.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, there's this idea in this movie that, you know, you've got the black bikers and our sport bike guys and the redneck bikers, and they're all, not only just is it ridiculous that they're saying that they're all constantly bickering and at war, but that they even, like, all know each other by name, right?
And hang out, apparently.
I cannot tell you the names, the first names or identities of any supposed one percenters in the state of Colorado, like, let alone in, like, the single town that I live in, just the whole state. I cannot tell you. I don't know who they are. Right. This is like how, thing in Roadhouse where, like, everyone knows that Dawson is the best cooler in the business. right? Like, who knows the names of any bouncers, right? I mean, unless they're a personal friend of yours, let alone the best in the business, right? So why do these people all even know each other to begin with? The movie is trying to say that just because there are different kinds of people who ride motorcycles, they're automatically at war, and you don't get it because you're not a biker, right?
Right.
Oh, this club scene has so many early to, like, you know, millennium tropes, like the crazy colors, that guy that like is fighting but with like impossible flair, right? Like he backhands someone with his fist, his beer comes out of his hand, but then he catches it again just to be cool in the middle of a fight. Oh, the guy from Monster Magnet got a line. So good. Oh, I got to give some love for this movie right here, because in this scene, this guy that plays Luther, like I said, I've seen this movie several times. There are three of our heroes who I'm not aware of their characters' names, but I know this guy is Luther. And look at him just kind of fill the scene here. And this is also music video. Like, you kind of have to have a rock star persona to fill the screen this way. And this guy just came from a giant bar fight. And this guy has to now sell the idea that this black gang banger biker is super afraid of him. And he does. Like, this Luther guy, who's the actor's name? Can you bring that up on the IMDb?
I'm not sure. Let's find that. But yeah, I mean, like, it's also impressive because he's not very tall. Like, he's a pretty small guy. But unless you're looking closely, like, he just kind of fills the space.
He's got a lot of muscles in those sideburns. He's doing a lot of sideburn acting here. Like, as much as Jamie Presley is, like, tongue and lip acting, I feel like Luther is sideburn acting. And our villain Henry James is mullet acting. Oh, I see what you're saying. The chain comes back now because they strangle him with it.
Yeah.
Right, but we're not given any direct clue that it's the same chain. In fact, we're supposed to not realize or forget that it's the same chain.
That's true.
Also, isn't our chains that flexible? I don't think so.
Only in one direction.
Right. They managed to whip this chain around like it's a rope and just strangle this guy super quick. I don't think you can. I think strangling someone with a chain would be incredibly hard. Yeah, I'm not buying it, but whatever.
Yeah, it'd be pretty tough.
If we nitpick this, the whole movie falls apart, as we're going to learn. More Thailand talk now. Why all this talk about Thailand? Was it the fourth time they've mentioned Thailand in this movie? Why? All they could have just said is he went to Mexico. You've heard plenty of movies where people disappeared to Mexico. And then in the movie, they can still go back to Mexico. It doesn't matter, right? But they keep pushing this Thailand agenda. Did the director, like, go on vacation to Thailand before they made this movie? And he was super into talking about Thailand?
Yeah,
He never, like, has any objects from Thailand. He doesn't use any, like, Thai language words. It could have been anywhere on Earth. Right? Could have been Russia. It could have been Canada. It could have just been New York, like as far, the other side of the country. But they keep pushing Thailand.
I mean, if he just said Thailand once and then they didn't mention it again, okay.
Right, but we're 25 minutes into this movie. Like, every 8 minutes so far, they've mentioned Thailand.
It's kind of like, as an audience member, when, you know, like when someone gets back from somewhere and you, like, meet them at a party and, like, you're the first person to get there and they tell the whole story of what they've been doing, and then another person shows up and you have to sit there and watch him tell the story again to the next person, and then somebody else comes and he's got to tell the story again. Like,
yeah. This is actually the best scene in the movie. This is where it actually does slow down for a second and try to get you to understand something about the characters rather than just like go at the fastest speed a script can possibly go. And we get some sort of moment here to like develop their relationship or get us to give a shit in some way, at least. I mean, we don't. It's not enough, but it's something. Oh, and we totally get some whale tail there. That's another running theme in this movie. Every female character has exposed whale tail. Okay. Look, so they're in a motel right now, right? And so our other guy, whose name I don't know, is banging the girl with the champion tattoo. These are both like all heroes in the movie. We haven't heard their names, or I don't remember them. They're at a motel, and the motel is all decked out in like Asian like restaurant shit because he's an Asian guy. Are we to presume that he lives in this motel?
Perhaps.
What the fuck? Oh, now Ice-T's discovered that his brothers died. Not much happens here, except another recurring theme of this movie is extremely lax law enforcement.
Like, he's just taking his necklace off the corpse.
He's touching the body, right? And then he just basically admits that he knows who did it.
And he's going to kill them.
Right. Jamie is just hanging out on the top of this cop car doing some more lip work. Shouldn't all these people be brought in for interrogation right now? I don't know. They're parking their cars haphazardly. It's okay. Now we get one of the best parts of this movie, Adam Scott. The only thing crazier than the mullet might be Adam Scott's hair. You want to talk about 90s tropes. I think Adam Scott went back in time and gathered up every bottle of Ellie Lux that was ever made and put it all in his hair for this movie.
He's also rocking this insane, like, before its time hipster look at the same time as well.
Is he hipster?
Well, he's got the full suit. He's got the t-shirt underneath and like the Vans
and the flip phone. He's got this super I don't give a fuck attitude. Like, I'm a cool FBI agent, and his partner's like super young and cute with the braids and everything. Like, it's an odd choice. I love it. I love what he's doing in this movie. It's fantastic. Just these smart ass FBI agents, because the FBI, like, the cops were always stiffs in these movies. So this did flip it around a little bit. I love that. Oh, man. What is it with this Ice-T gang in circles?
I also want to point out that they're all in a circle explaining what they're going to do to get revenge. The cops are right there, 10 feet away.
I never noticed that.
They're in the shot.
They haven't even left the crime scene, and they're explaining how they're going to go commit another murder out into the open.
Oh, that's great.
I love this, too. The super lazy detective work that the FBI is doing. Like, they've gone to the motel, and they've gotten somebody's ID. Well, they got Colt's ID there, right?
I believe so. Right. It's not really important.
But Colt didn't stay at the motel. So I guess Colt is paying for his buddy's room that he lives in at the motel?
But he's been out of work for months. He's been living in Thailand for God knows what reason, doing God knows what.
Yeah, this doesn't add up. I mean, I love that this movie feels no responsibility to make sense whatsoever. So look, we just get another big shot of her champion tattoo. Is she only in this movie because Champion paid for product placement?
Perhaps.
That must be, because she doesn't do anything for the plot whatsoever. Oh, yeah. Here we get a scene where he's explaining his grand plan to get the drug-filled motorcycles discovered by the FBI so he can get off the hook for having the drugs, and then they're all going to go to Mexico. There's a lot of holes in this plan. He could have already given up the motorcycles, which his girlfriend has pointed out multiple times.
Well, he was in Thailand, so getting to Mexico already would have been a very easily attainable thing.
Right. Supposedly, these motorcycles also have titles. He could have called them or sent them just a letter. He could have sent them like a ransom-style letter from Thailand to the FBI explaining the motorcycles and the drugs, and he doesn't even have to be here to put himself in danger.
Or, you know, called a lawyer.
Oh, this is where we get a glimpse of the future of Bluetooth.
Oh.
So, oh, so good. Ice Cube has just pulled out some sort of early Cardo and just Velcroed it to the side of his helmet so he can take a phone call from a truck that's driving right next to him. But this doesn't track, because in many other scenes in this movie, at 100 plus miles an hour, motorcycles in different lanes, the characters can talk to each other in their helmets just by yelling.
Do we need to bring up the group pissing?
They're in a brotherhood, man. Yeah. They even pee together. Look, another shot of her and the champion tat. That
it's every shot
she's in, they show the champion tat. That's the only reason she's in this movie.
It's literally a walking billboard.
This movie only has three product placements as well. It's Triumph, Aprilia, and Champion spark plugs. And Champion's really getting their money's worth.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see them as like racing sponsors or anything else either. They really went in whole hog on this one.
Well, this is also kind of post-gentleman's agreement. So I imagine none of the Japanese manufacturers are wanting to get in on this and having their brand promoted this way.
Oh, everyone but Aprilia and Triumph, who weren't really hitting big in the States yet. Everyone that was already established just ran away from this movie.
Yeah.
And Champion's an odd one, because I'll bet they make a lot more money selling spark plugs for cars, right? You know,
doesn't every single motorcycle use NGK?
I'm pretty sure NGK and Champion like all have equivalent spark plugs, right? And I don't know too many people who are super specific about their spark plugs, right? Like, you know,
it kind of works or it
doesn't. When was the last time you heard a bike advertised like, oh, it's got Olin shocks, but like NGK spark plugs? They couldn't even go for the Champions. Like, seriously, it's a $20,000 motorcycle. You couldn't give us the Champion spark plugs, right?
Right.
It's not really a spec people care about. I mean, people make a big deal about the tires that their bike comes with when it's like, well, you know, you can just replace those after a few thousand miles with whatever you like to ride with, right?
I do want to point out that we're at yet another diner/gas station. And every shot is either filled with somebody's face, the building itself, or it's an upward shot at the sky. They really don't want you to know where they are, really.
Or that this was all filmed within, like, 1 square mile, right? Oh, God. Oh, here we get a little shot played for comedy. Again, we're supposed to think this movie is self-aware. Now, so all these guys half a second ago were on their motorcycles, and then they just jumped off, pulled out guns, and split them. Okay, so this is where it's really obvious.
Not notice this the first time.
Yeah. So they're being chased through the desert by a biker gang, and it's super obvious. It's just a bunch of fake sport bike fairings thrown onto dirt bikes. It's comically bad. Like, the number of exhausts that all the bikes have changes and everything. It's super good. I'm not sure that anyone involved with motorcycles as a true profession besides Jesse James was involved in the making of this film. Because why would it be necessary to create this desert scene? Except maybe they just didn't have the money to shoot many chase scenes in town, I guess?
I don't know. I mean, they could have just used a whole bunch of CGI, but...
Well, they blew all that in the final scene of this movie. There's not a whole lot of impressive CGI. Think about those windmills in the early scene. They blew a lot of the budget there. Okay, this part where they're hiding out in a cave. First of all, this cave is lit, which is we don't have much explanation for. Like, there's hanging lights. They're in a cave in the middle of the desert. I guess it's supposed to be a mine, maybe? But why is the power working? Also here, so again, I was saying those scenes that don't track, that don't work well. There was a shot up close, because everything's a shot up close, of our Asian hero, who I don't know his name, his rear sprocket sort of making a noise in the last scene. And here, just out of nowhere, he's pulled out, I guess, a chain breaker and whatever, and removed a bent link on his chain. And then our other hero, whose name I don't know, goes, oh, Henry choked this guy with the chain off his own bike. And they're like, how do you know that? And he goes, it's complicated. Is it complicated? You cut the chain on his bike. You didn't tell us as an audience, but it's a pretty simple act. They needlessly needed to make a complicated plot to make you think this movie's deeper than it is. This is how you know the movie is not self-aware. Okay, you go with it here on the forensics, because I can't even begin to talk about this.
Well, there's not a lot to say, but when you hear it, it's patently absurd. And the whole plan of the movie going forward is based on this one premise that somehow they're much like dental records. There's a whole field of chain forensics, and that if they just find the chain that he was strangled with, they'll be able to match that to the wound and prove that he didn't kill Trey's brother.
All right, Emma. If you're listening, you're the only person that could tell me if this is true, and I would believe it. Soichiro Honda himself could come back from the grave and tell me this is a true fact about motorcycles, and I would laugh in his face. But Emma, if you can tell me that there's anything to this, I will believe it. Otherwise, this is the dumbest premise of a movie ever. But this movie is really fun to watch, so I've seen it 7 times. We get more Adam Scott here just being so into it, out of it. I love him. I love every scene that he's in. It's magic. Adam Scott was not a big name when they made this, was he?
I don't think so. I think he'd only been in a couple things before this.
I'm pretty sure Ice Cube's the biggest name in this movie. God, I love how 2005 this movie is. Like, because of course Adam Scott's driving a Hummer, right? What could be more 2005 than a Hummer, right? There also seem to be a lot of scenes that carburetors appear when I don't think there's a single carbureted motorcycle in this entire movie. Like, not one.
Are the Strikers not carbureted?
No, they're fuel injected. His RC-51, the RSV-4, her Triumph, they're all fuel injected. Oh my gosh. Oh yeah, then of course Colt has to say, I live my life a quarter mile at a time, and she says it's the dumbest thing she's ever heard. Look, you can only do that if this movie had its own brilliant tagline. And as much as I love what is it about driving cars that makes you all such assholes, that doesn't really resonate with the audience, since it's a whole audience of people who drive cars. Oh. Okay, we're leaving too much time because we just want to watch this movie. So what do you think the reasoning was on the idea that they all have to be lost simultaneously and no one knows where anyone else is, and then they all have to guess where everyone else is going? Do you get that? Because right now, none of the bad guys know where any of the good guys are. None of the, and there's like four different groups of people here. There's Ice Cube's gang, there's Henry James' gang, there's the feds, and there's our heroes. They're all just out in the middle of the desert somewhere, and then they all just figure out that our heroes are going to try to escape through this like palm tree grove.
Well, they're also out in the middle of the nowhere, so there has to be, like, what, three different ways to get anywhere? Like, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of options.
What is this, like, is this like a pineapple plantation? I think that's what this is supposed to be. I don't know. But basically, they just have this amazing chase scene through what looks like the worst surface ever run sport tires on. People pull stoppies on all this brush, which I'm just going to say is completely impossible.
And we also get treated to the dirt bikes again.
Oh, yeah. We get more dirt bikes dressed as sport bikes here. I'll give it to him. The first time I saw this, I didn't realize it. I had to slow it down, and then it was that obvious. But there's also a lot of green screening going on here, which upon a second viewing is super obvious.
There's also a lot of off-roading while firing from motorcycles and people having casual conversations through helmets.
Yeah, people having conversations through helmets, but people pulling guns out of leathers at high speed. What is going on? Oh, there was a sweet crash there, though. That was pretty good. Also, presumably, all of these bikes were in a straight line running into this, and now we got people coming in at angles, which, again, goes with the whole theme of this movie, that bikes can just teleport in this movie. Don't get that at all. We get some... you know what? There is one other company that paid to be in this movie a lot, which is Arai. I just noticed that all the bad guys are wearing Arai helmets. Oh, I guess Alpine Stars paid a little bit too. So there are a few more, but no major motorcycle builders, which is interesting. I want to talk about the scene coming up with the train.
Yeah.
I will say that full disclosure, I saw this movie in the theaters when it came out. I had a motorcycle at the time. I was into it. I was like, I'll go see this motorcycle movie. Now, I remember thinking this was ridiculous, but this is one point in the movie where it goes so over the top. I love it. The CGI is not that great. Everything they do is preposterous, and I'm not gonna criticize this scene whatsoever. This is cinematic genius. And it's so derivative of, like, you know, like every Mission Impossible type movie that we've ever seen, right? But somehow doing it with the motorcycle, I don't know. This works for me. This part, I know I've nitpicked my way through 45 minutes of this so far. Through 45 minutes of this so far, just criticizing every little thing, but I've got to give it up here. I would not have the balls to make a movie with this scene.
On first viewing, this was the scene that just made the movie for me. Before this, it was all just totally ridiculous. I was like, what is going on here? But when we got to the train scene, it was like, okay, I'm on board now.
I think the moment where you were on board was when Ice-T pulled out, like, the 2005 Cardo and Velcroed it to his helmet. You shouted out and demanded that we pause the film.
I needed answers.
Oh, man. Now, in the entire movie so far, I think this scene where Colt saves Ice-T from the train, this is the only thing he does in the movie that confirms him as a good guy.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, really just from camera angles and dialogue, we're kind of meant to think he's a good person, but he's been a total prick the entire time up until this.
Yeah, because let's kind of review what we know about him. He rides like an asshole, breaking laws everywhere. He probably did something illegal to get all this money to go to China, whatever. Because why did he
at least three fights?
He instigates a lot of fights. He did at one point accept, you know, was doing business with this known drug dealing motorcycle gang, right? And was at least shady enough that when he supposedly, presumably, innocently got into this situation with the drug filled motorcycles, he was in a position that he had to run, right? Another appearing motorcycle. Colt standing in the middle of the open desert, and his girlfriend surprises him by riding up on her Triumph. What? Surprised him so much he had to spin around and pull a gun on her. So he's also real trigger happy, like real quick with the gunplay there, Colt, right? You know? So this whole idea that he's our hero is real interesting to me, because all he's done is save Ice-T, Ice Cube, sorry. Like, everything else really adds up that he's not such a great guy. And by contrast, you know, we're supposed to be kind of rooting against Ice Cube, but he runs this gang, but they refuse to sell drugs. We don't know of anything that they're going to do illegally, except that they have this murder revenge plot. But to be fair, one of their own was killed, right?
Yeah.
Is Ice Cube really the hero of this movie, just like brought into a whole bunch of trouble?
I mean, overall, given his situation, he's been incredibly reasonable.
Yeah, he's let Ford like go away a couple times when he's sort of hinted that someone in his position wouldn't really do that.
I think so far Ice Cube has been, yeah, more of a protagonist than Ford has.
Yeah. That, yeah. And you know what? Like, Ice Cube's brother's name that got killed? It begins with an S. I knew it at one point. I can't remember it right now. Do you remember?
I do not.
Yeah, this movie does not do a good job of letting us know, like, what people are called. Like, I know Ford's name. I know his girlfriend's name is Shane, but that's only because we see it written on her shop sign several times. I don't know Ice Cube's name. I don't know any of the names of anybody in his gang. I know the FBI guy is McPherson. I don't know his partner's name. And I've seen this movie. This is like the 8th or 9th time I'm seeing this movie. Like, nothing really tracks through this movie. It's just this bunch of like disjointed sort of music video looking scenes that's supposed to come together as this like chase road motorcycle movie thing. But I don't know who these people really are. How am I supposed to connect with them if you only tell me their names once, really briefly? We don't know how they know each other. We don't know their past or anything. But we do know that Adam Scott hates dumb convenience store clerks. I love the way he just decides he has to settle this guy's hash for no reason at all. He obviously knows that this guy does nothing.
Well, it's really weird because you're expected to think of him as like this throwaway character, through most of the movie, but he actually gets like twice the screen time as the main villain.
Oh, yeah. Well, I love that he tells everyone to shut up as well. He tells Henry James to shut up. He tells Ford to shut up. He tells the clerk to shut up. I think he tells his partner to shut up at one. He tells everyone to just shut up. You know, I wonder if that's a genius thing on Adam Scott's part. I wonder if he brought that to the role, because in a movie where none of the characters are really telling us anything, when there's no character development and like everything is supposedly exposition, I'm not really getting a lot of useful information from anybody. So it's pretty fitting that Adam Scott's just walking through the movie telling everyone to shut up. I love it. So, okay, here's something I've meditated about for a while, and I've come up with nothing. So I want your thoughts on this whole thought of the escape from the race car truck. What's your take on this?
Well, what about it?
Okay, so they escape in this semi, right? This, right. Like, close call. And they have to abandon, some of their bikes. But apparently they get their bikes up into the semi with no ramp or whatever. But okay, whatever. Let's just go there. They got them in there. Let's say they're super strong. They lifted the bikes in, right? So somehow they can hear in the rain and at this traffic stop outside that the FBI is going to search the truck. And so they're like getting in the race car and on their bikes about to explode out the back or something. Wouldn't it be better of them not to have taken the bikes and have just maybe just decided to hide inside or behind the car in case they were going to get discovered?
Well, not since they brought the bikes.
Why did they need to bring the bikes? So they could have an interstate chase scene later?
Well, yeah.
And look, like, our Latino hero just seems pissed off that Colt gave him a look like, what are you fucking thinking you're going to do if they open this door? And he pulls his key out all mad, like, bah. Okay, we got our first clue where we are. They're heading into L.A. County. The only time this movie's given us a time and place. See, here's Luther again. He's not even given a line. He just says woo, but he's selling it. Like slamming soda? Is that Luther's second line in the movie here?
Yeah. So oh, good. It's Max Beasley.
Who's Max Beasley?
Luther.
What's Max Beasley been in?
More
lip work from Jamie. More lip work from Jamie again. Look, there's lip work from Jude, from Luther.
Well, every shot is a close-up on their face, so there's got to be something going on in the scene.
Oh, okay, we have to talk about Dane Cook. This movie's so 2005. Dane Cook is a cameo. Look, he does this, watch, he does this thing where he's like, looks like he's going to do the super finger, but then he pulls out this like supposedly like heavy metal sign. Oh, of course they have to do the whole like, oh, real bikers versus fake bikers thing. And that this is supposed to make us think the movie's self-aware. Look, they come in close to the camera and then he literally punches him on the nose. Literally, this movie tries to punch it too hard on the nose to let you know it's self-aware. Again, they're doing the whole real bikers versus fake bikers. Oh, it's a movie about bikers. They're fake bikers. Yeah, we get it. You're not self-aware. This movie is not well-crafted. Still fun to watch. Oh, man.
So wasn't there already an actual
this doesn't track either. They had an FBI road stop.
And why now, is there another checkpoint now?
For some reason, McPherson has his eye on this truck. He's suspicious about this truck. We don't know why. We're not given any clues. They're just stopping the truck again. It's only because they have to justify this chase scene and the writers don't know how a clever way to make it happen. It's not like they were written into a corner. They get to make the scene whatever they want.
Right. My guess is that they, I think they shot this scene first and then they had to go back and recut it.
Yeah, something like that. Also, do people transport race cars with fuel in them? I don't know if that really works that way. Also, how did they get their bikes out of the back there without crashing them? I don't know how that works. And again, look, see, everyone just happens to magically be able to teleport their bikes. All of a sudden, Ice Cube and his gang are here. How did they know to be here?
Also, the cops don't seem all that interested in
stopping
them.
Again, yeah, lazy cops. Another running theme in this movie. So, speed works interesting here as well, because this is where we get the most of our characters riding at 100 plus without even sunglasses. So that doesn't work. Oh, Kirker, I guess that is another product placement. Ooh, shot of LA, another establishing thing. Okay. This, from here on out, it's pretty much just one big long action scene to the rest of the movie, isn't it?
Pretty much, except for the warehouse scene.
Well, that supports your theory that they had this whole ending sorted out, so they just did some lazy writing in the middle to try to join up all of our characters meeting each other, sort of, and then they all have to join up for this big, long action scene. But here's the problem with this scene, right? So this is based off the Fast and Furious franchise, but I will give the Fast and Furious this, even though I don't think it's all that great. I mean, the later ones are, but at least that film franchise set up early on a big cast of characters that we actually got to know really well and root for.
Yeah.
And the big chase scene at the end, everyone had a big stake in, right?
Right.
And half of the people involved in this chase really have no reason to be there, right? Not even Ford needs to be here. Like, he could have just decided to tip off the FBI about the drugs when he was in Thailand. We established that. But his friends don't need to be
here.
We've
established that Ford has had many opportunities to resolve his problems.
Right. But why is Ice Cube in this chase? He already has suspicions that Ford didn't kill his brother because he's like, oh, why did he let me save my life, right?
Well, he needs answers.
Right. And then the FBI doesn't need to be here because, spoiler alert, they're bad guys. They're actually drug dealers. So they know. Well, really, all they're doing is chasing down Henry James and his gang to try to get their drugs back, because they're not the bad guy's drugs. They're the FBI's drugs, really. So they don't need to be involved in this chase. They can just sort of wait for the gangs to get the drugs back, right? Like, let's say he does catch Colt and he gets his hands on these drugs. Well, then the FBI is going to seize him, and he has to get the drugs back from the FBI itself. He can't cover up recovering the drugs when his partner, who's not in on it, is there, right? So what interest do they have for being here in this chase? None. No, but literally none of these characters need to be in this chase. And that's why we don't care about it, right? When they're doing that final chase scene in The Fast and the Furious, everyone's there for a reason.
Right.
And it matters to every single one of them one way or the other, right? Does Ice Cube care if Colt gets captured by the FBI? No. He doesn't care.
Well, Yeah, I guess everyone involved here could have just waited for this to resolve itself.
Exactly. Exactly. But some ridiculous shit does happen. I mean, we skipped over a lot of things that happened in that car chase. Dane Cook came back. They flipped a Hummer. There was
after the FBI crashed into the two cars.
Yeah, again, for no reason. And now apparently they made so much progress ahead of the rest of the chase that they have this little gunfight and conversation in the middle of the highway, and but no one's able to catch up. I don't get it.
So meanwhile, Ice Cube's brother could catch up to motorcycles that buzzed him at over 100 miles an hour.
Well, he had a teleporting motorcycle.
That's fair.
Okay, so this movie does some things here that are really confusing as well. All of a sudden, we find the bikes with the drugs, and then Ford, in just a couple lines of dialogue, establishes that everyone's going to meet up, and that's going to be at Shane's shop, and there's going to be this handover of the drug bikes.
Also, clearly, nobody working on this movie knows what crystal meth looks like.
Yeah, that's true. But, explain this for me, right? So they're all going to meet up at Shane's shop. The drug bikes are there.
But they're clearly on the pier.
Right, but Ice Cube's supposed to be there. He's supposed to be there. Henry James is supposed to be there, and McPherson's supposed to be there, right? And it's all just supposed to play out that the FBI immediately arrests the right guy, and the drugs get handed over, and this is all just going to happen smoothly. Am I incorrect in that every single time in this movie thus far that everyone's met up, chaos, crashes, speeding, explosions, guns have all come out? No new information has been exchanged between anyone except this understanding between Ice Cube and Colt that they now both agree that he didn't kill his brother, even though no actual hard evidence has been shared on that.
Yeah. I mean, well, first of all, they've already led them on an extremely dangerous high-speed chase on the freeway.
Okay, in this scene, Colt is now again just jamming a screwdriver into a set of dual carbs, into the intake, fixing what? Where are the motorcycle people in this movie? Oh.
Yeah, it's...
Okay, so basically in this end scene, they show up, everything is a clusterfuck. We have to give it away. They get to Shane's shop. Surprise, surprise. In, I don't know how much time is supposed to elapse, but probably not very much. They've moved all the drugs somewhere that we don't know about. And they've wired the bikes with explosives. So here's my thought. Ice Cube's gang sells explosives. Because where else do they get them?
But who sells explosives?
I don't know, okay? I'm just trying to find a way that this movie works for me. And then also it's revealed here that Shane has a Y2K. And then they have to like do this thing where he makes a big deal about it having the Rolls-Royce helicopter engine and all of that. But they just said it's a jet turbine engine, but then yet later on, they're able to just fire this bike up without letting it spool up or anything and just go immediately.
Yeah. It's weird that they...
So why explain that it's the fastest bike in the world that has a jet engine if you're just going to take off with it like it's a regular gas engine?
Yeah. Why take something real and then have it behave in a way that is in no way representative of what it actually does?
I don't know.
Why not just make up a bike or like come up with like some weird custom build that somebody else said, like some fictitious character had done?
I do love the choices Adam Scott here makes, where like he shoots his partner and he does the whole bad guy, I'm revealing my plan thing, right? But rather than being really evil about it, he's really just super condescending about it. Like, he's just really annoyed that he has to kill people now. Like, you people are just such fucking idiots. Like, now I have to shoot you.
Which, in a way, he's kind of the voice of reason in this whole film.
Yeah. He's like, this script has gone on far enough. He's like, trust me, I'm the only one that read every page of this movie. You have no idea how dumb this story is. I'm killing all of you.
So now he's wired the bikes to explode, and he's got a dead man switch. How did he think the FBI would have taken the fact that he had wired bikes to explode? Because unless he is 100% guaranteed to be betrayed, that's not going to end well for him.
Yeah. That is insane. Yeah, so now we learn that Henry James and the FBI are in cahoots, which they were just... Oh, wait, I think we get some more lip action. No? Okay, not there. But almost. Almost. You know what I will say? I don't think Ice Cube does any like lip and tongue work, but he does a lot of nose work in this movie. Every close-up, he's got a nose scrunch going on.
He's always got like a bit of a snarl going on. But that's also just Ice Cube being Ice Cube.
Yeah, it's like he's like he needs like a... he's too dry. He needs like humidifier. His nose is just all dry and clogged up all the time. Oh, yeah, more lip work from Jamie up close with Shane. So ridiculous. We get some good hero lines in this. This movie is not afraid to go for like the cheesy hero lines, right? Because we had what is about driving cars that makes you all such assholes, right? And then God. I feel like we need to redo this whole thing and just have a counter on Jamie Presley's lip work. It just keeps going on, the tongue and lip work. Like every time, like 20 times in recording this, I've been like thinking of something and I just get distracted by her licking her lips because I'm just aware of how many times she does it. So that dude, Max, what's his name? You said, is he like Max some sort Easley. Of martial arts guy in other movies? Because he did all that shit with the chain and it didn't look like a stunt guy doing it.
He's mainly just like a TV actor.
Well, apparently he's like some sort of martial arts enthusiast as well. Maybe that's what landed him the gig.
Maybe.
Because we should talk about the overall casting of this movie. It's generally insane and pointless, right? Like, I have a feeling that our one dude here in the yellow leathers is the guy from Hostel, but I'm not sure. And I feel like I've seen the other guy in something else, but I feel like I saw them all in stuff before this movie. And they never did anything afterwards. Maybe they thought they were going to get a bunch of almost stars and this was going to be big later.
Well, yeah, but they also couldn't cast anyone from The Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, I do know Vin Diesel was offered a small part or cameo in this and turned it down. So maybe they just had to hire a bunch of no names so they could afford to make the movie.
I think that's probably true because I don't think there was a lot of money put into it, and I don't think there was anybody really willing to take a big gamble on this movie.
Hmm. Yeah, bulletproof vest, asshole. Another hero line. Why didn't she clear herself of the explosion first? Like, she got to choose when to set it off.
Yeah. Again, not a lot of great decisions made. Also, apparently a jet turbine bike can blow people off, can knock people off their feet.
Yeah, so this is where the CGI gets bad. Wait, no.
Oh, yeah, line two.
Yeah, there we go. See, I told you, she only has two lines in this movie. She makes it work, though. Like, I, you know, for only having two lines, I can't really, really be too pissed. She was just doing tongue work in midair on that motorcycle. Oh, my gosh. This motorcycle gymkhana fighting, or motorcycle breakdance fighting. I don't know what this is between the two girls, but this, I could rewatch this scene again and again and again all day long. This makes no sense, and I love it. There's karate moves. There's wheelies. There's like produce being smashed about. This really has everything that you want. There's a knife. There's slow motion. Oh.
But you can't even really complain about anything here, because if you didn't walk out during the train scene, then you've got to be on board for this.
Oh, far from complaining. Like, this has me going. I absolutely love this. The two chicks, like, going at it, like, apparently they're just professional stunt people in their spare time when they're not running shops or just being part of cruiser biker gangs. I mean, with all the time that they spent not developing characters, you'd think they could have given us a scene where something happens, like Jamie Presley's picked up from her job in some sort of like traveling stunt show where she does like a wall of death thing with a motorcycle to establish she can do all these stunts or something, right? Right.
But she just owns a motorcycle shop.
Well, like, no, that's Shane. I'm talking about Jamie Presley.
Oh, right.
Another hero line. So good.
But she's only got two lines. Where do you fit that in?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, they just had needed a scene of them like picking her up somewhere. And they're like, okay, we're on our way to go catch the good guys here. I don't know. This movie could have been better written. I think we all can agree. So it's all culminated up to this end scene where he's riding the world's fastest motorcycle, but I guess it's a little difficult for him to catch up to this Yamaha Striker. I mean, the Striker's not a slow motorcycle.
Which apparently also has NOS.
Yeah. I guess NOS just automatically makes you close to the fastest motorcycle in the world. Yeah.
You're not even really allowed to question anything at this point.
Is this the last time that the trope of the flaming line of fuel trying to catch up to the vehicle was ever used?
I think in the cinema, non-satirically, it might have been.
Like, this movie is so over the top that it broke that trope.
Possibly.
This is the seventh or eighth time I'm seeing this, and I'm just realizing that that may be the most significant thing about this movie. That it's broken that idea. Ugh. Oh, that's so wonderful. Okay, so basically now we're given this confusing idea that there are no consequences for anybody through anything they've done in this movie whatsoever. Look, she's just stolen somebody else's motorcycle.
There's two dead cops.
There's dead cops.
They blew up a building.
They blew up a building. No one asked where they got the explosives. There's gangbangers hanging around. This FBI woman just says, oh, they explained it. Move on. Like, you're free to go. We have no questions.
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot about this. They grab a sprocket. They prove that the chain matches the sprocket. Mac matches is the murder weapon.
All during, they're just about to explain it.
And it's like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, you know, this whole thing we've been trying, this bullshit forensics idea we've been trying to force down your throat for half of this movie, we're just going to throw it out the window now. So dumb. Look, so they shake it. Like, why has the FBI woman not just pulled out her phone and called for backup? We've established that she has a cell phone, right? Everyone in this movie has a cell phone that they just keep up their ass because no one has pockets in their leathers.
And apparently none of the cops have, from the highway chase, have caught up yet.
No, it's...
Apparently there are just no cops in LA.
Everyone's just free to go to Mexico. Why?
Especially since there are no consequences.
None whatsoever.
Ice Cube's not going to Mexico.
No, he's not going. He's hanging around. He's just standing here at this crime scene. People have been murdered, blown up. There's a dead guy hanging from a chain inside this place that was then set on fire and blown up, right? We're not even hearing sirens, right? At least in every other bad movie at this point, you hear the sirens of the cops coming and the heroes decide they better get out of there, right? Were sirens, like, was Foley not in the budget, right?
Apparently not.
Oh. What music do we end on here? Oh, of course. Is this Creed?
I believe this is Creed. Actually, is this Nickelback?
Oh, it's Nickelback. That's right. Of course, this movie's so 2005. We have to end on Nickelback. But again, so these characters that don't matter. In like the third scene of this movie, this Hispanic girl that our Asian guy meets, they bang once after she learns that he lives in a motel, has dangerous friends involved with meth-dealing bikers, and are killing FBI agents. They leave her to take all the blame at a gas station in the middle of nowhere. She somehow catches up with them again at the end of the movie, has another motorcycle. We don't know where that came from. And she's just cool to go to Mexico? For the indefinite future?
Apparently.
Just because Champion Spark Plugs needed that product placement.
That's a good point, yeah.
That really sums up this movie.
She can't leave.
She can't leave. Like, they gotta get that in for Champion, man. Gotta. Is Warner Brothers just secretly run by Champion Spark Plugs? Because Champion is really mentioned a lot more than even Aprilia in this. There are plenty of scenes with the RSV4, but only a few times do we really get the full-on side shot of Colt in the leathers, like, really blasting that name out. Oh, man. All right. I don't know if I can go all the way through the credits on this one. Unless there's some sort of secret scene at the end, but I don't think so. So, all right, this was ridiculous. Hopefully you had some fun watching this movie on your own and then revisiting all the bananas things that happen in this movie. I guess we should end by saying, I know we made a lot of fun of it, but I really love this movie. This is my favorite motorcycle movie. And I think it's safe to say for you too, right, Swiggy?
Definitely.
All right. So we're going to go out here because we actually have another regular episode we have to record tonight. But this has been your Christmas bonus. And I think we're just going to cut this one short. We're just done. No outro. It's a bonus. It's a weird commentary thing. Stay safe and stay tuned, guys.
Later.